Everyone here has spoken really beautifully. I just wanted to add perhaps some personal remembrances of Rosh Hashiva. Some of us here knew him very well, some of us barely, some of us not at all. I think the thing I remember most is his absolute clarity. So pure, so clear what had to be done, what the task was, what the Almighty wanted. Many of you know, for many years I've put in more time in care than working with young people than I have in my business. And I'm involved all year. And rarely a day or two goes by when I'm not involved. And I really feel like I'm on top of things. And every year, Aish has what they call their international meetings. We get together. And Rosh Hashiva will get up and start speaking. And he starts speaking. And I say, where was I last year? What was I thinking about? How did I get so distracted? How did I miss the point so much? Absolute, total clarity. Notice a few people here who knew Rosh Hashiva are nodding their heads. So I want to give just a little feel for Rosh Hashiva and the way he was, the way he looked at the world. The Rosh Hashiva would look for ideas and take ideas from anyone, from any circumstances. I remember about 20 years ago, when computer games first started, there was this huge hit of a computer game called Pac-Man. And Rosh Hashiva noticed that all of a sudden around the yeshiva, new guys were coming in there. Pac-Man. We talked about Pac-Man. So a month later, he was on a trip in North America. Those days they had sometimes these large computer games. And he was staying at someone's house and heard the man had Pac-Man. He bought a Pac-Man set for his son. So the Rosh Hashiva asked that the son should take him down and teach him how to play the game. And he played for an hour. He had to. This was motivating people. This was getting people excited. What was the essence? What was the essence of the pleasure in Pac-Man? And how could he use that essence to communicate with people and to lift people into relationship with the Almighty? That was the Rosh Hashiva. Rabbi Shalom Dembo, who many of you know, bring trips from AE Pi fraternity, Asian Thor. And it was either last year or the year before, Rosh Hashiva met with some of the guys, and he sat with them again for an hour and a half. And he wanted to understand, here you have on college campuses, these Jewish boys join a fraternity, and they consider themselves brothers, and they work together, and they're part of a brotherhood, and they build a lifelong relationship. What the heck was that about? How does that work? You know, we at Eishet Torah are always trying to build a sense of unity. Here's a group that has built a sense of unity, been doing it for almost 100 years. What can I learn from them? How does that work? Rosh Hashiva just always had a sense of learning from everybody and everything. I mean, it's a mission of Pirkei Avos, but he meant it. He meant it. If there was something out there that could give him a better understanding of humanity, of young Jews, he wanted to know about it, he wanted to experience so he could teach it, he could learn from it, and he could draw people closer to the Almighty. The Rosh Hashiva, for those of us who wanted to spend time with him, Rosh Hashiva never had a lot of time. I mean, you know, we saw a beautiful, beautiful presentation of some of the successes of Eishet Torah. With Eishet Torah now getting close to 30 years, you could make a movie three times as long from the failures. So many times he would empower people, he'd have an idea, or someone at Eishet would have an idea, and the Rosh Hashiva would back it. He would back it. If something sounded good, he'd back it, he'd give it a chance. He himself but very often talked about the fact that he started five organizations to try to save Klal Yisrael, all of which were abject failures, and he had to close them down. And he was involved in a multitude of yeshivas, which he established before, some that are still there, like Or Sameach. But he wasn't quite there yet. With Eishet Torah, got closer. But he wasn't satisfied. He took pleasure, but he wasn't satisfied. I was in Eishet Torah once, it must have been about 20 years ago. And we were talking about something. And he used to teach a class, 48 Ways of Pirkei Avos. He used to teach a class every day. And he excused himself. He said he had to study to teach the class. He took out a notebook. And he studied for about 15 minutes. And we walked to the class. We walked back after the class. I said to him, how many times have you taught that class? He thought about, I don't know, 300, 400 times. I said, you stopped for 15 minutes to study to teach the class? He said, you don't understand. The power of Pirkei Avos, the power of the Mishnayos, he said, if I could just figure out a way to teach any single Mishnah in Pirkei Avos properly, if I really got it right, whether I had 10 people, 20 people, 50 people in front of them, me, every one of them would immediately get up and say, this is truth, this is what I want for my life, this is how I have to live my life. He says, it's not happening. I'm missing something. I'm not getting it right. If I got it right, that would be the reaction. I actually met someone a few years ago. He'd been learning at Eishet for 15 months, and he went to one of these Pirkei Avos classes, came up to the Rosh Yeshiva after the class, and he said, this is what I've been looking for my entire life. What should I do? Rosh Yeshiva walking down to the Beis Medrash. It was 15 months that he ended up. But he took pleasure. He took tremendous pleasure, while at the same time not being satisfied. Incredibly busy, teaching classes, running a world organization. And yet, you hear the stories. There was a story at the Shiva house. There was a woman who got a call from the Rosh Yeshiva. And he had an idea for a shidduch for her. And it was a very unfamiliar phone number. She said to her, she said, where are you calling from? I said, what are you calling from? I have an idea for a shidduch. She said, no, I've never seen that machine. Where are you calling from? He said, if I carry on calling from, will you go out and, go out on a shidduch day? She said, yes. He said, I'm calling from a phone booth in Manhattan. She said, what are you doing in a phone booth in Manhattan? He said, yeah, I had an idea for a shidduch, and I saw the phone booth. And I, you act on it. What would I have done? Can't speak for the rest. I had an idea for a shidduch. So maybe I wrote it down. Maybe I think about it a week later. You have an idea for a shidduch. You find the nearest phone booth. Immediately, you're there. You're working on it. Two Shabbos ago, Rabbi Sarani spoke at the first Shabbos after Rosh Yeshiva's Niftar. And he had a very close relative, and if you know Rabbi Sarani, he has this relative who had some real health problems, and he went all around Brooklyn, where he's from, getting brachos from tzaddikim, from Rosh Yeshiva, and he found out by accident, he bumped into Rav Noach, and he found out who he was, so he went to him. The next day, he said, I'd like you to, give a bracha to my relative, and maybe you could call them and give the relative a chizuk. So, he didn't think much of it. Noah said, listen, I'm busy, I'm in America, I'm going to raise money, organization. I'll try if I can do it, I'll try it. We never. So a couple of days later, the relative told him that the Rosh Yeshiva had called, and she had a nice conversation with him. So he told the story to Rabbi Jacobs. They share an office in Eishet Torah in Los Angeles. And Rabbi Jacobs said, well, what did he say to her? And he said, I don't know, I've never asked her. So he called up his relative, and he said, he told her, the Rosh Yeshiva had passed away. She was very upset. And he said, well, when he called, what did he say? He said, well, he talked to me for an hour and a half about how to talk to God. How to talk to God. How to tell the Almighty what you need. How to communicate with Him. He talked for an hour and a half. So they should go, when did the Rosh Hashiva ever have an hour and a half? For someone whose relative he had met twice because he happened to work on the same floor. That was Rosh Hashiva. You hear stories. You hear these stories. I heard a story. Mary Zohar confided this in Los Angeles once a year. He was there with the head fundraiser for Leibel Hachem. Those of you know the story, Mary Zohar was the leading entertainment personality in Israel, parts of the Rosh Hashiva's efforts, and he came from. He basically disappeared, learned in Kollel for 15 years, and then came out of Kollel, started giving speeches all over Israel. He started getting crowds of 1,000, 2,000. Within a few months, he was giving crowds, I'm telling the story, crowds in stadiums. 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 people. And after 6 months, Rabbi Zohar said, this is a failure, I'm going back to Kollel. And people said, what do you mean? Well, he said, look, you have all these people, they get tremendously excited, everything's worked up. You see, a month or two later, nothing happened. If I can help, I can help. Nothing's happening. You know, I'd rather be sitting and learning in Kollel. So the gentleman with him said, what do you do? You have a problem. Go to Gadol HaDor. Who's the Gadol HaDor up here? It's from Noah Feinberg. So they went to Reb Noah and they explained the nature of what was happening. He said Reb Noah gave him a plan. Like 5 years ago, he had said, we're going to have this Shiloh on Kiruv. Reb Noah had it all worked out. What you do? And everyone goes, and you get them to sign, and the name and their address, and their phone number, and then you get Avrechim, and you train the Avrechim to go out, and they knock on the door, and you tell them they're coming. The whole thing was worked out. So they said to him, we said to him, Noah, this is going to be expensive. How much is it going to cost? But Noah said, $250,000. So we have no money. So Noah said, so I'll raise it $250,000 for the first year. After that, you're on your own. Once people see it works, you'll be able to start raising money. And I noticed my friend Borach Rabinowitz in the second row, he's a lot of the pressure of raising money for Asia Torah for meeting payrolls. We've never had an extra $250,000. We've spent a good part of my relationship with Asia Torah trying to make a payroll behind, being two payrolls behind. This is for Chai Yisrael. He had the plan, it needed $250,000, he'd raise it $250,000. I myself know of numerous situations where we got organizations that had nothing to do with Asia Torah. I had never known about this Leibel Hachem thing. They needed help. He gave them help. It was Leibel Hachem to change the nature of Israel. He had the time. He had the money. It was a woman who had a tremendous problem with her heart, functioning at 5% capacity. He had the time. It wasn't a contradiction. It wasn't a contradiction because you weren't saving Klal Yisrael without being concerned about every single Jew. And you couldn't just say function on individual Jews, you had to save Klal Yisrael. And it was one solid act of clarity. And the consequences of that clarity. He always told us his age. He always told us his age something which I think might be relevant for all of us here. He always told us his age. He would say, when I'm not here anymore, you'll accomplish a lot more. He said, you won't have me to depend on. You'll have to do it on your own. You'll accomplish a lot more. And then he would say with that beautiful smile, say, why don't you accomplish it now? And at least give me the nachas. Why ain't no way to take responsibility and come along? Unfortunately, that day came, and he's gone. And we don't have that clarity anymore. We don't have that leadership anymore. But we do have the responsibility that the Rudy said, and that is, take up more of the load, take responsibility, and accomplish even more now that he's gone.